You are listening to How Do We Make It Better, the podcast where we explore how people in nonprofits, corporations, social enterprises, politics, and other walks of life try to make it better. Get this where all quality podcasts are found. Links to all those places are at bit.ly/How Do We Make It Better Podcast, or if that's too long, bit.ly/HDWMIB. You can also check us out at dougabdiel.com. That's dougabdiel.com. Today, I had the opportunity to interview Alyssa James. She was a successful corporate lawyer working 100 hour weeks or more, and she decided to take a break from that career. Not a break in the sense that she was taking time off, but a break in direction, trying to break the trajectory that she was on and reevaluate some of the very premises about why she was doing what she was doing. And in that process of looking back and reevaluating her life, she thought that she would try and start a site that helps other women do exactly the same thing. Now, it's fair to say that I have very little knowledge in this area and very little personal experience, which is part of the reason that I chose to reach out to her and listen to what she had to say. I hope that you find the conversation to be as refreshing and different as I found it to be. Alyssa, I'm sorry if I already butchered that. We've known each other for a while, but as with so many things, there are pet names that go back and forth, colloquial names that go back and forth, and I will do my best to remember to call you that. As my mother once told me, you can, you know, call me anything but late for dinner, right? So I want to thank you for taking the time out this early morning in Hong Kong to talk to me. I think it's fair to say that we have, in many ways, very little in common. And I find that to be quite exciting because I think there's an awful lot that I can learn from you. So people already know plenty about me. Why don't we just start off with just a bit, you know, who you are, what your background is, where you're from, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. I grew up in Australia and I studied law, and I worked in the law as a corporate lawyer for a decade or so, and absolutely loved it. I think it was perfect for me. But recently, over the last few years, I'd sort of found myself working weekends, long hours, often 100-hour weeks, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. But eventually my body did, and it told me, and I got quite sick. But at the same time, my husband and I, there was an opportunity for us to move to Hong Kong. So we took that opportunity and we moved, and it's fantastic. It's a dynamic, incredible city. And it was a great opportunity for me to take stock. So in terms of why I let myself burn out, so the things that I could do to improve that, and why it seems to happen to so many people, particularly women in the corporate environment, or not even the corporate environment, female entrepreneurs, mothers, particularly working mothers, have a tendency to strive for perfection. And I think there's an assumption that to be successful, you have to do everything perfectly. So I have spent the last year or so on a personal journey of my own, trying to discover or first recover, and through my website, irislillian.com, trying to explore those factors that led me to my burnout. So I don't know, that's me in a nutshell, really.
I think that's great. And I want to praise you for coming out and saying, hey, it's okay to not do everything perfectly and to try to learn through failure. I was just, we were talking before we kicked off this recording. My last interview was with one of our strategy and operations guys inside of Google X, and they set themselves very interesting targets inside of X where they aim to fail. Meaning if they don't break something X number of times, they feel like they haven't learned enough. Mm-hmm. And it is such an inhuman thing to do, because the natural human tendency is to be self-rationalizing, to look back and say, look, everything is perfect. Everything I did was great. When it's uncommon, but much more useful to be able to look back and be like, oh, look, you know, that wasn't everything that I hoped it was going to be. How can I make it better? I would love to explore that a little bit more with you. And kind of if that is the thing that you are really passionate about now, and I know that your journey continues to wind and change directions slightly, and the things that you're interested in taking up bend and change a bit. But if it is this issue of burnout, or if it's perhaps a slightly different take on that one, I guess I would love to just get some understanding of why this is such a big problem overall, both in terms of magnitude and then in terms of like the actual subject.
I think in particular, and obviously I've done a lot of reading around this, but the focus of the website is a career website for women. So I come from that, and obviously I'm female, so I come from that particular world view and aspect. And I think, I mean, looking back at least personally, growing up, everything I did, I had to be perfect at. Whereas I look at my brother, and my brother was sort of encouraged to be brave. He climbed trees and he fell, and that was okay. Whereas if I climbed a tree and I fell, I would cry and I would be encouraged not to do it again. And I think that sets the scene later in life that it's not okay to fail. And I feel like we need to raise our daughters to be braver. And I watched a podcast recently, and I'll send you a link to it and confirm the name of it. But that was the thesis of the podcast, of the TED Talk, actually, sorry. And it really resonated with me. And I think it's very, very true. I know you have a daughter. I don't know. I think it's something to be very mindful of.
Look, yeah, it's absolutely something that I personally struggle with just as a human, right? Nobody likes to get out there and get their nose bloodied and then step up and try again. But certainly as a father, you want to encourage your daughter to not look at the world as a place to be avoided, but a place to be entered into fully. And that includes some of the knocks and bruises as well as some of the great things. So I'm just curious for you, if you can maybe think back in the last year for me, like I know you wended in slightly different ways. Why did you settle on this specific issue as the one that you wanted to tackle versus say, for instance, one of the people who I'm working to get on the podcast, but our schedules have not aligned, is the chief of staff she's also a woman. She works in Liberia at a school for some of the poorest girls in West Africa. Mm-hmm. And they have this insane number of women who are raped before they're like 16 years old. And she's just working on just the foundational things around, like, can we get them flush toilets? Can we mm-hmm. make sure that they get to and from school? Like, yeah. Why is it like there's a huge amount of issues that we can try and tackle for women who are trying to bootstrap themselves up in the world, for women around safety? Like, why was it? It sounds to me like you're kind of dealing primarily with professional women who are trying to do it all. Why was it this area that you wanted to focus on versus another?
I suppose, yeah, that's an easy question to answer, because I'm obviously going through my own journey, and I was trying to address the problems that I faced during my time in the corporate world. And in doing so, I realized that sharing this information and encouraging a conversation would help other women. And I think I can add value in that space because I've had this opportunity and I've had this experience, which a lot of other women have had, but perhaps haven't had a career as long as mine, and they haven't got to the stage where I did. Perhaps they haven't quite burnt out yet, but they're on the way, or they're just trying to navigate their way through the corporate world and the corporate structure. So I think I can certainly offer some fantastic advice. And I also, Hong Kong is a fantastic place to launch a business, and there's a fantastic network here that means that you can get incredible exposure quite quickly, and also exposure to women who are facing the same things that I am. People work ridiculously hard in Hong Kong. I was even surprised when I moved. So I think a lot of them are facing those issues that I faced. And I suppose because that issue was, A, I was experiencing that or going through my journey and having experienced those issues and seeing other women going through them, and it's something sort of you step out your front door and you see, you want to fix. And that's why I focused on establishing the website to address those issues, rather than, I suppose, something that I would have to upskill and move country. And it was something that I could focus on in Hong Kong, and the infrastructure here and the culture meant that I could do that relatively easily, leverage my own experience and strengths.
Like, that makes perfect sense to refer back to the last podcast I just did, that the last person I was talking to was just talking about making an impact locally. And I think for you, that's what it sounds like. You're like, look, this was something that I could do, and I could make an impact on. So that makes perfect sense to me. And I think it's something for all of us to consider wherever we are. What is the pain that our communities are facing, mm-hmm. and how can we make it better? And it doesn't really matter what community we're talking about. So I commend you for taking that step out. Can you help me understand, though, because I work at Google and I love metrics and numbers and things, and I think a lot of the folks who listen to this will as well. Can you help me kind of quantify the problem a little bit, or like, how big is this issue, or how do you, like, when you think, maybe you don't even think like this, and that's okay. I'm learning to accept that people don't live their life by numbers, and I'm slowly growing in that. That's a personal journey for me. But like, when you think about, hey, I went to bed tonight and I have made an impact, what are the numbers around that impact that you're trying to say, I moved X number of women from here to here, or I have, like, how do you think about the impact you're trying to make?
That's interesting. I think about that a lot. And obviously I look at Google Analytics and Search Console and my Instagram followers and the responses that I get from them. But I think that in short, when I go to bed and I think, what impact have I made today? I don't automatically go to facts and figures to quantify that. I go, whether right or wrong, I will go to a comment that someone has made to me about an article that was published on the website. Perhaps they've said, I didn't want to ask my boss for a pay rise, but I read your article and now I'm going to do it. So I suppose it's anecdotal feedback and evidence of people reading the content and having had a discussion in our Facebook group and feeling like they're not alone in their workplace, because perhaps they're the only female in their team, and they'll log onto our Facebook group at lunch and have a chat to everyone and share something about their day, and then they'll go back to work. So it's events like that and feedback like that spur me on. I obviously have to keep an eye on the analytics. But I think in terms of an impact, that's how I measure it personally. From a business perspective, it's very different, and it will be very different once we monetize the site, if that happens. So I'll get back to you on that one.
But that's very fair. I think I'm really interested in how you personally deal with this, because a lot of people are feeling, there's this old book by Robert Putnam in America, who's a professor, called Bowling Alone. And it talks about the decline of civil institutions, like things like bowling leagues, where people get together and have the kinds of cathartic experiences that you're talking about, where mm-hmm. they're like, oh, actually, it's not just me. And now, today, the kinds of places where we congregate are the communities that you're helping to generate here. Like, you're creating a nice spot for women to share their experiences and share their thoughts about how to make it better. But it's not really the same as sitting down and having a cup of coffee with somebody. It's
exactly.
not really the same as sitting down. Yeah, like,
exactly. I absolutely agree. And I think, I think people I totally get that, because I connect with people face to face, and that connection is amazing. And that's why I love doing my interview series and interviewing these incredible female entrepreneurs and businesswomen. And I think one way that we will be addressing that is by arranging physical meetups in each city that we, various cities that we choose. So Sydney, for example, all the Australian capital cities, London and Hong Kong. And that will be our next step, because that is really, really important to have that connection, that physical connection. And I think people are definitely that sense is coming through, that feedback is coming through in a number of ways. And I've read a lot of commentary about that, how we have to start, and for internet-based businesses have to start going offline and interacting with their readers and their consumers offline.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Look, I think now is probably the right time to just have you, if you could, kind of talk through why this issue and why, you know, what your metrics for success are. Because I think it's important that everybody listening have a really firm understanding of how big the issue is. So maybe the best way to frame this question is, even if it's your anecdata, where, you know, it's just the comments that are coming up on your site, what for you has been kind of the most inspirational thing that somebody has said, hey, I was here and I've moved to there? What is the thing that, like, kind of, if there's one comment where you're like, oh, that was great, this is what's keeping me going, what was that comment for you?
Yeah, so I had a lady in our Facebook group, and I'd love to find her quote, actually, because it was really, really fantastic, and I was so amazed, and not, I suppose, not amazed, but it was so wonderful to hear her say or read what she wrote. She's a senior scientist at a well-known university in Australia, and she is the only female, she's a senior fellow, and she's the only female senior fellow, and she popped into the Facebook group at her lunch break and said, it's so nice to be in here, to be reminded that there are other women out there, and it's okay to succeed and want to succeed, and it's okay to be female. And it went along those lines. And it was so, yeah, it was really fantastic to hear that. And I actually refer to it quite a lot, and I go back to it myself quite a lot. So I think that's my probably key example. There are a lot of them. And they sort of come up when you least expect it, when you're having maybe a meeting, even a close friend for a drink. She said, I read that article the other day. I think you're absolutely right. And it really resonated with me. And that happened last weekend. I'm just trying to, I can't recall what the article was.
Yeah, well, given the volume of stuff that you put out on your site as compared to my piecemeal stuff that I put up on my blog and my podcast for not remembering the specific reference, that's perfectly fine. And we can, we'll put that specific quote from that senior Fantastic. Scientist in the show notes. But I think everybody can relate to just wanting to be accepted for the things that they can't change and trying to be good at the things that they're endeavoring in, male or female or middle of America or best coast, quote, self-appointed West Coasters or what have you. I think that lots of people can agree with that. So look, from there, let's accept that as the premise. Like, what are the things that you're trying to do, encourage professional women? Let's move on to like your plan. And I'm really keen to understand, you've already started talking about it, meetup groups. What is your plan to try and help women who are trying to be successful in their careers, if that's a succinct summary of what you're trying to do?
Yeah. So first and foremost, build the community. And the way that we're planning to do that at the moment, and our strategy changes constantly based on feedback and technology. And one of the things we're launching shortly is a podcast. And that's a conversation between me and a very good friend of mine who is in marketing in Hong Kong. And it's a very informal discussion about one issue per podcast that one of us or both of us has experienced in the past or is experiencing at the moment. So our very first podcast, which we haven't yet launched, but it's ready to go, was about her asking, she's just started a new role, and she was trying to negotiate her salary, and she was finding it extraordinarily difficult. So we talked through the reasons she was feeling difficult, reasons it was difficult for her. So she felt guilty about asking for money, for more money, even though she felt that, and she could establish and prove that in terms of the market, she should be paid more. She didn't want to be a troublemaker and start things off on the wrong foot. And we actually, in real life, I was coaching her through this process and testing her on, you know, why she was feeling that way and whether it mattered and whether she, well, obviously it mattered, but why and whether she should put that to the side, whether it was relevant consideration for the negotiation and whether what she was thinking was really what her prospective boss was going to be thinking. So it marries quite well with our articles about, for example, asking for or negotiating a pay rise. So we talk about these practical issues and then we offer insights and advice that we have either read in different articles or that we've written about ourselves or that our the Iresilian team has written about. So that's one way, the podcast. The other way is obviously the Facebook group, the free Facebook group that we have, and we have discussion points each week that we encourage people to talk about. And we also encourage people to come online and if they've faced an issue that week at work or that day at work, to chat about it, or even if they just want to vent about something and ask for insights from other people about how they've tackled those issues. Or, I mean, it can be something like, I have this amazing leather skirt. I really want to wear it to work, but I don't know how to style it. Stuff like that, which is a really, really like typical issue faced by women. What can we wear to work? I don't want to wear a suit. I really want to wear this bright red jumper that I just bought because it's awesome. And it's these things that I don't think we talk about enough, like these. Anyway, so that's what the Facebook group is there to do, is to encourage this exchange of information and ideas and support. And then there's our content. And it's super exciting, actually. So we're ramping the volume up of the content that we produce. I have built a team of 10 writers, 11 including me, all around the world. So we have people in Brisbane, Sydney, London, Bristol, Oxford, Hong Kong, Singapore. And we come from a diverse range of backgrounds, industries, ages, seniority. And it's every piece that we write addresses an issue in the working life, the daily life of a working woman, modern working woman. And I think the thing that we focus on is drawing from an example, a personal example, or an example or an issue that's happened to a colleague or a friend. So the insights and ideas that we provide or the conversation we start come from a personal experience. And I think that's unique. I don't see that a lot on other career websites. So I'm really, really proud of that.
You're doing about a million things. I'm not surprised. So Alyssa, by way of a little bit more background, is a bit self-deprecating in terms of what she's done. I think to her name, she has an extra law degree from Oxford that she did. Spent plenty of time working in Europe in addition to working 100-hour weeks here in Australia. She's been all over the place. So it is not a surprise to me that even in addressing work-life balance issues and how not to burn out, that you're attacking it from a million different directions and full throttle. Old habits die hard, I think.
Well, it's true. But at the same time, even though I'm doing all of this, I'm trying to do it smarter. And I'm conscious every day. I check in and I say to myself or ask myself, does this need to be done now? Can it wait? And I focus on prioritization. And I make sure that I switch off at a reasonable time. And what is reasonable depends on the day. But I give myself the permission to, for example, last night I said to myself, okay, you started late. That's okay. It's all right to finish at 6 o'clock and go out and have a drink with your friends. That's okay because that's living life and that's cool. So I'm very much retraining my brain, but it's at the forefront every day.
Even these things that you talk about as individual, you know, components of what you're talking about as a broader product of building the community, launching a podcast, that takes time. I know, I can relate. a Facebook group, don't have one of those. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Arranging physical meetup, building website content. I think the last post I made was weeks ago. Like, but you're doing this at a velocity that is breakneck. Like,
oh my God, thank you for saying that, because I feel like I'm a turtle. Like, I beat myself up because I haven't got, you know, two pieces out, or I haven't responded to 25 emails. You know, I mean, it's not that many, but it's really weird when people say that, oh, you've done so much in a short time. I'm like, I've done nothing.
No,
I need to check myself.
Very high standards for yourself. But let me unpack that prioritization bit for you though. Like, so maybe the best way to frame this, given your background, is like, what have you learned in retrospect about your 100-hour weeks that has enabled you to, and maybe the right way to frame this is like more of these daily tips that you're talking about. You just talked about one, like giving yourself permission to cut off at a certain hour and go out and have fun. Yeah. Like, how do you think through how much time do I invest in the podcast versus how much time do I invest in the Facebook group versus how much time do I invest in this? Because they seem like different demographics, and the data that I have seen seems like you're touching very different people. So how do you make the choice between which of those communities you're investing in?
It's very much a test and learn, but I have a structure throughout my week. So the first Monday, Tuesday are writing days. So that's very much content focused because my website is king. And Wednesday is marketing day. So that's when I'll go onto Facebook, the Facebook group, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, YouTube. Thursday is life admin. So I've actually allocated a day where I do everything else that sort of builds up during the week, the task list, like banking and grocery shopping and cooking and buying presents for my family that live in Australia, you know, birthday presents, that sort of thing. Those little things that sort of, I don't know how they ever got done when I was working, but they did somehow. So I allocate that for Thursday. And then Friday was sort of the anything that hasn't been done day. But I've actually decided that Friday is going to be my SEO day because SEO is king.
For those not familiar, that is search engine optimization. So trying to figure out how to back solve the Google algorithm and get yourself higher in the search rankings for free. Mm-hmm. That is the SEO. So.
Yeah. Okay. And the reason that, I mean, it was a slow burn for me because I'm the furthest from an IT specialist, SEO specialist, developer type person that you've ever met. I'd barely been on Instagram an hour before I launched. And I realized that the time that I was spending marketing could be better used focusing on SEO, because in the long run, that would drive traffic to my site much better than it would with marketing, if, you know, on Facebook or Twitter or even Pinterest, you know, creating documents and images and links in Pinterest. So that's very much why I changed my course, my week, based on that realization. I'm sure it's intuitive to some, but it certainly wasn't to me.
And on Saturday and Sunday, you give yourself permission to relax and have fun? Is that the...
I do.
Nice.
Yeah. Mostly. Unless I'm traveling, in which case I just work through, because when I travel, it's all work, and I think that's okay. And then when I get back,
Except for those Saturday mornings where your friends tell you, hey, I have a new podcast and I want to, you know, see how it is that you're pumping out this amount of content like this morning. So that one aside, it's all.
I'm being a bit naughty today. I also have a meeting with my brand strategist. So today's sort of half a working day, but that's okay.
Fair enough. All right. So interesting balance: Monday, Tuesday, web; Wednesday, social media; Thursday, life admin; and Friday, SEO.
Yeah.
Let me press you on that. How do you know that's the right balance?
I don't. And I think, as a, you know, it's test and learn. And I think by analyzing, I mean, the reason that I changed Friday from a sort of all-purpose day where I just did followed up things that I hadn't finished during the week to an SEO day was looking at the data and realizing, well, I'm spending a whole day on marketing and I need to start driving traffic other ways, obviously through searches, rather than going out and posting something maybe on a Facebook page, someone else's Facebook group or Facebook page, it's much more time efficient for me to rank first, second, or third in a search result than me to have to physically go out and post something in someone's page or draft a newsletter, for example. I also do bi-weekly newsletters. So I suppose at the moment it's test and learn, and I think I'm also building my team at the moment, so my schedule's a little skewed. But I also think that you get a sense naturally as you do it, you understand what needs to be done first, second, third. And I think naturally it just happens. You just focus on that stuff. So I think it's important to have a structure.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate bit of being, completely overwhelmed. It turns out that putting out fires is almost always a rational thing to do because there is no alternative, right?
Right.
But it sounds like you're trying to live a different life where you're not constantly putting out fires and working 100-hour weeks and planning ahead and trying to break things out. So yeah, I understand what you're saying. Some of those things when you're just full up, to use an old Australianism, full up to the dolly's wax with things to do, that they do stack out. But I'm curious to hear how, based on reflection of the last, decade or so that you've been working in Australia, like you're addressing that. I guess maybe the right way to phrase this question is, how is that fundamentally different than the way that you were approaching the 100-hour weeks that you were putting in when you were doing full-time law?
It's the way that I approach it. So I say to myself, if I do a list, draft a list for myself, and I don't get through the list, that's okay. So if I leave work and I haven't answered every single email in my inbox and filed them, that's okay. If I don't respond to someone's email within 10 minutes of receipt, that's okay. And I need to tell myself that stuff and remind myself of that constantly because it's a habit. And I think it comes down to striving for perfection because that's what I think perfection is.
That's really interesting. So it sounds like you're saying that it is this permission thing again. It's giving yourself permission to not do something is the difference between what keeps you at work for 40 hours versus a 100-hour.
Absolutely.
And what is your subjective or objective experience with that on the back end in terms of real productivity? Like my hypothesis would be that if you are just taking the list of things that you have to do in a day, you're going to start with the things that are most important. And by the time you're getting to hour 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in your day, that you're working on relatively low value items anyways. And while you might be getting them completed, it doesn't matter a whole lot. So you're losing, there's diminishing marginal returns to everything. So you're probably getting lower value. Your value is diminishing less by virtue of putting in the last few hours than it was versus putting in the first few hours. Is that hypothesis borne out by your experience or no?
Personally, I feel like I'm constantly frustrated and I'm not being as efficient and as effective as I can be. But I wonder whether that's a product of what I perceive as being perfect and what has to be done and checking off everything on the list. And one thing that has been really frustrating me is the big items that will take a day to complete and are not super urgent and don't have to be done, obviously don't have to be done immediately, tend to get postponed often. So I've got one task which will take me probably a couple of days, which I've been postponing for about 4 months, and that's really getting to me.
I think you're being honest, which is all that I ask you to be, which is, look, it sounds to me like you're saying that most of the time you're not sure. And most of the time it doesn't feel like... And most of the time it doesn't feel like you're doing things effectively. And look, again, to refer back to the last interview that I did, I think that's what most people feel most of the time. And the most interesting thing to do in that moment where you're not feeling like you're being personally effective is, it's like Viktor Frankl. I don't know if you've read the book, Man's Ultimate Search for Meaning, but he talks about what it was like to be a concentration camp victim in World War II. Mm. And even if a guard has a gun to your head, you still have a choice. And it's, how do you feel about this other person who has a gun to your head? Do you choose to hate them? Do you choose to love them? Do you choose to show care and concern? In your situation, you have a choice that it sounds like you're striving to do something differently about than you would have before. It sounds to me like you're saying, in the environment where you're completely full up, with things that you would do in a previous life, Alyssa would have beat the heck out of herself. And in this life, you're like, look, it's okay. We're moving on.
Yeah. And I'm not, that's where I'm striving for sure.
That's what I'm striving for. I think it's worthwhile, especially for somebody who runs a blog about trying to give women permission to not be perfect, to admit occasionally, even in a public forum, that you're not perfect.
Oh my goodness, I am far from it. Far from it. And I'm so happy to be sharing that, because I think women, like, we should talk about that. Like, there's this perception that people are doing these things and they're ticking off everything and they're amazing and they're getting through all this work and it's not the case. I mean, maybe there are like a few people, but you know, it's.
I don't think they exist. I don't think these people. No, I don't think they exist. I'll be honest with you. you would be familiar with, by virtue of your reading and the work that you've done on the blog about imposter syndrome. I think there's a huge amount of that I see flying around inside of Google. Like, everybody's like, somebody's going to find me out.
Whatever reason, I think women are slightly more susceptible to that syndrome than men are. And so I think they're less likely to talk about these things. And that's the wall or the silo that I'm trying to bring them out of and trying to break down, because I recognize it in myself. And I didn't speak to anyone because I thought, well, you know, if I would tell someone that I really don't think I'm good at what I do, or which I didn't believe, but maybe a specific task, then they'd be like, well, why are you doing it? Like, or they would call me out, or I don't know, I was scared of the consequences, things like that. People either remind you that that's completely wrong, you're excellent at what you do and you're highly qualified, or yeah, I totally feel like that way as well. This is how I dealt with it.
You are listening to How Do We Make It Better? Check us out at bit.ly/htwmib. That's bit.ly/htwmib. So we acknowledge that it's the case that we all feel a bit like this occasionally when we're trying to do something, even something that is much more honorable. Well, I won't say honorable necessarily, but certainly much more laudatory from a public's perspective than, say, working on the nitty-gritty details of some multinational company's contract, that you can still feel the same way, still feel a bit like you're a failure at times. For you personally, like, how do you bounce back? What gives you the energy to be like, all right, I took that one on the chin, not sure that Friday was anything more than a wash. How do I move forward? Like, what is it that you do?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it depends on the day. But this probably happens to me every single day now, more often than it happened in the corporate world as a lawyer. So for me, I think it depends on the scenario. But as a general rule, if I feel like, I mean, a lot of the times I think to myself, what the heck are you doing? You have no idea. And then I think I go to my desk and I write down everything that I've learned since I launched and the reasons I'm doing it. And also I look at a little bit of feedback that I've got, or I will call someone, a friend or a family member, and chat through it and get a little bit of objectivity. And if that's not possible, I will get out. I will go for a walk, or I'll go to the gym, and I'll just, that helps me flick the reset switch, because sometimes you just get bogged down in this echo chamber that is your mind that is very unhelpful. And I think the quicker you can get out of that, the better. Walking is amazing. I get all of my, well, not all of them, but a lot of my great ideas when I'm walking. What's something else that I do? Probably seeing friends. But I think that exercise of sitting down and listing the skills that you've built up and that you've learned that prove that you can do what you're doing, and that positive feedback that you received from the product that you've created, I think is, if you can, it's like looking at your CV, I suppose, which is a great way of doing it if you're in the corporate world and you have this imposter syndrome. If you look at your CV, you realize how kick-ass you are and how amazingly skilled you are and what an asset you are to your company. And you're like, oh, why do I feel this way? I don't understand. But you don't have to understand. Just recognize that what you're feeling is normal. Recognize it. Don't inflate it, because it happens to everybody, and then move on.
Interesting. Are you building any of that? So, I mean, portion of what you're talking about there, trying to get some feedback from friends, or, you know, get some type of objective view, is taken care of by your Facebook groups, is taken care of by the comment strings that you have on your site. But like, are you thinking of building any of those kinds of, to steal a term that's probably thrown around a little bit too much now, the self-care stuff that you just described for yourself? Are you thinking about building that into the community that you have? Maybe it's not a meetup group, but it's a walking group or something like that.
Absolutely.
Like, how are you thinking about building that in?
Yeah, so we've actually got an event coming up in Hong Kong, and it's called sweat working. So you come along to an event and you do an amazing workout and you network, but you also have a chat either before or afterwards about the things that are concerning you at work or issues that you've faced. So that's one way we're sort of moving towards that, aside from the content, which also discusses these issues. So we write a lot of articles about imposter syndrome and ways to get around that. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. How can we build that into the site and to the offering? Because I think it's really important. And maybe it's as simple as something as drafting a checklist and sticking it on your desk. And here are the points that you need to look at or go to, or just a reminder at the, I don't know, the back of the toilet door, go for a walk. Simple things like this. Yeah, but it's something, thank you. It's something to think about. I will note that down.
Oh, great ideas. I do what I can to try and run those things. Curiosity I have for you is, like, so much of what you're doing, even there, right? Like, this is your personal journey. This is your personal work to try and make this okay. That is springing out of a lot of your personal experiences, adding other people's experiences in it as well. But are you at all worried about what happens if this doesn't work out, or the world moves on, or
yes,
what have you? Like, you personally have invested so much. Like, this is kind of—it's not like a cult of personality or something like that, but like, you personally have poured. Unlike the corporate world, where you're like, money bags make money bags, and money bags make money bags co. And I've worked for, and they don't pan out, but they're still, they can console themselves like Scrooge McDuck with like fat stacks of cash, you know, and like,
totally.
It's a bit different.
Yeah, it's so different, and it's really hard. and I think, actually, the thing that keeps me going, if this all fails, then I think when I initially launched this, I thought, this can't fail, like, this is not going to fail. But now...
That's a perfect entrepreneur mindset, by the way. Like, I realize 9 out of 10 people fail, but I can't. This is awesome.
Right.
I am going to...
Right.
Okay, carry on. Great.
I've definitely changed that, because I think if this fails, it's going to have failed for a reason, and that reason will be valuable, and I need to mine everything behind that value, because it will lead on to the next thing, which is going to be amazing, or not. The third thing that I move on to may be amazing, because I think I have interviewed so many women who are CEOs and senior financial advisors and female entrepreneurs who've started up these businesses, and they say because it's been said so many times that failing is okay, and you have to learn from it, and it's okay to fail if you do learn from it. And I think I'm starting to get okay with that. I'm starting to get on board. And I think you're right. I think there will be changes in technology and cultural changes that will change so rapidly that, you know, my website could be irrelevant overnight. And that's okay, as long as I'm ready to jump onto the next train. And I think that's why I'm so focused personally on honing the skills that I don't traditionally, I haven't, you know, I didn't learn at university. So, for example, search engine optimization, coding, learning about the, you know, data analytics, that sort of thing is key going forward. And so I think as long as I keep up to date and upskill, or continue to upskill, if this fails, then I'll kick ass at the next thing.
That's really amazing.
And this is all in theory. This is what I tell myself. But sometimes I just sit there in the cold sweats thinking, I'm going to fail. Oh, my God, I'm going to fail. Oh, my God, how embarrassing. But that's cool. It's all for the best. Yay. But I think I'm more than happy to be honest about that because it's absolutely true. And I think so many incredible women who are, you know, objectively absolutely killing it. Like, they're amazing at what they do, and they're in these incredible roles, and they have failed and failed and failed. And it's so nice to hear it. It's nice to hear because you think, oh, it's okay that I've failed. Oh, that's fine. So, and maybe there needs to be a different word or association with failure. A couple of people have come back to me on some of my posts about failure and said, oh, I call failure progress, or they rename it. And I think that's probably useful, actually, because there are such negative connotations with that word. But that's probably a discussion for a different day.
Yeah, there's a ton in there. And I think the area that you're uniquely positioned to talk about that I wonder about a fair bit is, by way of introduction, it is the case that males between, I think, the age of 18 and 24 have a higher suicide rate than just about any demographic. Mm. And it's probably the case that there is something evolutionarily useful about allowing males of a certain fighting age to have a minimum attachment to death and a minimum attachment to society and a minimum attachment. Because if you're in a tribal culture and you need to go out and kill the guys in the next lot over it, it's a little bit helpful to not have a great self-preservation instinct. Right. But it was a big problem for us in the military because we lost more Marines in the years when I was on active duty to suicide than we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, because they were just in that demographic. And we worked hard to try to prevent that and tamp that down. But it was never an issue with female Marines to the same degree. And I wonder if there isn't some kind of biological basis for wanting to feel very tightly bound to the community, wanting to have a self-preservation instinct that is a lot higher, that is, makes it exceptionally hard to do what you're trying to do as a woman, because that bit of self-preservation that says, hey, you know what, I really should squirrel away my money for the next rainy day and not start up a business, not go out there and potentially fail at something. Well, it is also the case that males 18 to 24 don't have that self-preservation instinct and go out and start businesses at an insane rate. Go out because they have exactly this mindset in their head that, well, who cares? Like, if I die, if I fail, it doesn't matter. I have no attachments. That doesn't really matter. But you're perhaps in a unique position, having grabbed a hold of something that is so statistically the preserve of young males and done it a bit later in your life and as a female, and you have a different perspective on it, that it's very interesting to hear. So yeah, I don't know that I had a question. I started off with a question and then I lost it. Go ahead.
So just something that came up to me, and look, I'm very much a stream of consciousness type person in my communication, and some people love that, some people hate that, by the by. I think in terms of survival mode and going out there and launching a business and taking on that risk, I think, and my statistics could be probably wrong, but I think it's something like 80% of the new startups in Australia are startups founded by women. That may be over-egging it, but it's something, it's disproportionate at least. Yes. And I think at least my interpretation of that is that starting your own business is a form of survival, because these women have often been in working for other people. They don't have the flexibility to look after their family and look after their own health and various other hurdles that you face when you're working for someone else. And by starting up their own businesses, they have complete autonomy over their time, their lives, that they can plan things out themselves. Yes, they take on huge financial risk, which is another massive issue, and I have an issue with, because I feel like if women are being pushed, or not encouraged, well, pushed, encouraged, if they're going this way, why should they have to have the burden of all this financial risk? And I think the reason they're moving away from working for other people, and particularly from corporate culture, is because corporate culture isn't structured for women to thrive right now, particularly women who want families and women who want to be healthy and to be great girlfriends and friends and husbands and maybe husbands, wives, girlfriends. Yeah. So I feel like that might be the survival thing that you're talking about. It's a way of women thriving in
an environment that's stacked against them a bit.
Totally. And I think, and it's such an interesting way of putting it. And thank you for drawing it to my attention.
I don't know that it's right, but there is some data that bears out what you're talking about in the refugee community. I know here in Sydney, it costs about $1,000 to help a refugee start up a business. Part of the friction, I just did a project with some folks on Thursday to help review some CVs from people who came in to Sydney from Syria and stuff. These guys really have got a hard time breaking into the Australian employment market because, you know, if you go to the University of Aleppo and your university no longer exists by virtue of it being bombed back to the Stone Age, then you don't have a transcript that proves that you have a BA and what have you. And by virtue of that, by virtue of this lack of a paper trail, by virtue of, you know, all the years that they spend trying to get here, they start businesses at a rate of, I believe, 4 times the base rate of the Australian population. And it's the same in America, actually, that they're much more likely to go out and start their own thing by virtue of not being able to easily get a hook into the traditional corporate world that we've set up, because it's so easy to, and I unfortunately have done it myself. You know, you have 100 CVs in front of you that you're reviewing for a job that you're hiring for, and you just don't have the time to sit there and be like, well, this person has a weird degree and they are missing, they got this gap of several years. And I just don't, it's too hard for me to sit there and evaluate what's going on with this person. But maybe that there's an analogy there to what you're describing, like because the corporate world isn't working very well for women, they're jumping out and doing startups at a higher rate. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So to try and get a little bit more structure on this, I am curious, like if you could name one thing that is preventing you, or maybe it isn't one thing, that is preventing you from helping women more rapidly, more holistically, or more effectively, what is that?
People. Cash to pay people to build up my team.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, all right. I think I have the plan and I just need to execute it. And it's tricky to execute it without bodies and without fingers to type. But we're getting there. There's everyone who's on my team is a volunteer. So it's pretty amazing that there's so many people that want to be involved and that understand our why.
That maybe leads me to the next question, which is if there are other people who have heard you and are like, look, maybe it isn't me, but I see my wife struggling with that, or I see my daughter and I worry about that, or maybe it is them, woman listening to this podcast, and they want to help out, or maybe it isn't a woman listening to this podcast. Maybe it's a male who's like, look, I totally, that makes sense to me. That's something that needs to be done. How can they help? How can they get involved? How can they?
Yeah, reach out. My email is hello@irislillian.com. Shoot me an email and we can hook up and we can have a chat. And go to the webpage. Let me know what you think. Sign up to our newsletter and become part of the community.
If you're a male, as I am, and you want to be part of the community, is there a place for us to engage with that and try and fit? You know, we probably won't understand fully, but it's something that certainly, again, as a father of a daughter, I'm like, oh, yeah. I really need to try and think through this. Like, how is there a spot for us there, or is it just like?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, the Facebook group, which is that discussion forum, it's female only at the moment, but we have plans in the works to encourage men into the conversation as well. We're just testing out a few things before we launch that. And by all means, come on and comment on our content, on our articles and our posts. And yeah, come and have a look at our Facebook page and feel free to comment on that as well. If there's anything you'd like certain topics you'd like to talk about, or I think something that's very, very important. We, in terms of gender diversity and the progress and bridging the pay gap and the leadership gap, it's a global problem. It's not a women's problem, and men need to be part of that conversation. And that's why we are so keen to encourage men to be a part of our community, because we can't solve a global problem with half of the population. And I think that works both ways. So in short, yes, please come and be part of our community. We'd love to have you.
Okay, great. Before I close this up here, just a couple of real quick rapid fire questions. If you were to define just three things, what are your strengths?
Loyalty, drive, imagination.
That's a killer combo. Nicely done. Okay. What are you learning right now?
Search engine optimization.
Fair enough.
And how to be kinder to myself.
Okay. I think perhaps the other plug that might make sense is, if you're listening to this, and the best way to search engine optimize is honestly to just get other people's link to your content. If others out there run web pages and want to link to Iris' content, then that would be very useful. So there's that. And then the next bit is, who have you met with? What have you read lately that's really been useful for you that you'd like to share with others that I can plug and put in the show notes?
Sure. So I recently interviewed Marissa Drew. She's a global co-head of Global Market Solutions of Credit Suisse. And she was obviously incredibly impressive and so relaxed, and we had a wonderful conversation. I haven't published her article yet, but there were some really key messages that I got from our conversation. And one which has really stuck with me is, figure out very early on, or now, what your key drivers are, what drives you, what gets you out of bed in the morning. And then check in every 6 months with yourself to make sure that you're sticking to those drivers. Or if those drivers have changed, analyze it, recognize it, and then pivot and focus on those. Make sure that your every day is hitting those drivers. And that's something that I've been thinking about sort of the past week since our conversation. And I think it's really important, because a lot of what we do, we sort of get into habits of day-to-day life, and we forget what's driving us. And if you're waking up in the morning and dreading going to work, that's a big red flag. Or if you're not sleeping, big red flag. So I'm very grateful to Marissa for that insight.
Very fair. All right. Well, this will be a couple of weeks in coming out, so I'm sure by then we'll be able to link to that in the show notes as well. Final question. What should I have asked you that I haven't asked you yet?
Maybe what drives me.
All right. What drives you?
Meaningful interaction. I think that is my key driver. Having a fantastic conversation face-to-face with someone and really sharing something special.
It's a little ironic that you've spent a lot of your time working on a website then, which is by definition a one-to-many relationship and limited face-to-face interaction.
Right. But such a big part of my website is this interview series. I will meet two or three women a week, and face-to-face, occasionally not, but mostly I make a point of it being face-to-face, because it's amazing when you get a connection. It's something I hadn't experienced a lot prior to this. So I'm really grateful to be able to do that so often.
Well, we're getting a bit close to time now. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time out and for educating me a little bit. Obviously, this is very different than the world that I live in day to day for a million reasons. And I appreciate you taking the time to tell me about a very different way to make it better that I definitely have not spent enough time thinking about. And I will do so more in the future.
Thank you for having me.
I think it will make me. Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. All right. And thanks again. Take care.
No worries.
You are listening to How Do We Make It Better? Check us out at bit.ly/htwmib. That's bit.ly/htwmib. I could not do these without the dedicated professionals at Sound4U in South Africa. They are behind the music and the mix and everything else that goes into making this podcast actually happen. They go above and beyond in every way, turning a simple recording into a true production. Thanks again.